man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm going to get that gun of mine, and I'm going to change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe, and today we are joined by film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
Well, Ify, this is potentially good, but I have high hopes, and I'm going to go ahead and sort of plant my flag here. Coca-Cola has announced that for the holiday season this year, we are getting Coca-Cola Cinnamon and Sprite Winter Spiced Cranberry. Now, they've done Cranberry Sprite before, and I'm a fan, but, you know, I like the idea of more spice. Cinnamon Coke, I think in theory sounds great, but they tried Cinnamon Pepsi a few years ago, and it was the worst. But I trust Coke more than I trust Pepsi, so we'll see how this goes.
Ooh. Is there going to be a design on the can?
Oh, yeah. Ugh. Snowflakes
who
and the whole
this,
thing.
Who is this What's Good brought to us by?
This is an unsponsored What's Good. I'm a soft touch for anything holiday related.
That sounds delicious. I stand all the different colors. Like, people are trying to hate and shit on the orange Coke. I'm like, no, I'm here for
There's
it.
Orange, and how do I not know orange about vanilla any of these Coke.
Cokes? Okay.
And they
baby aspirin
it.
Coke.
Then they released it in the zero flavor too, which they need to do more. Which that's what I'm hoping comes from these. Because as a keto boy,
these are this is full sugar, so your thighs will not be indulging in it. That, apparently the Cinnamon Coke was a Coke Zero in the UK last year.
Oh, then
but
it has to.
America likes their high fructose corn syrup. So deal with it, Jim Boy.
All-time best Coca-Cola matchup, underrated, always hated. Coca-Cola Black, where they mixed it with coffee.
Oh, God, I
loved it. I was starting, it was when I was in high school, and I'd start my day, and the teachers would look at me and go, oh, no.
You guys, I am the movie yesterday because I do not know any of these Coca-Cola products.
I had a perverse fascination with Coke Black. I didn't like it, but I was fascinated
it was
that it
so
exists.
Good.
Who knew?
We are also joined by producer and film festival programmer, Drea Clark. Drea, what's good?
You guys, I just got back from the Minnesconsin. And I want you to know I successfully completed my 3 pontoons in 1 week goal, which is what everyone should try for when they're in the Midwest. I got to float on the Wisconsin River, the Mississippi River, and Pelican Lake. And then I got to, like, floaty float on Nord Lake. So, yeah, I got my, like, my summer floating Midwest in. There's nothing better than a pontoon.
Well, I'm surprised you came back.
I know. You know, I had that return ticket just calling my name.
She's actually sitting in a pontoon right here
I
in
am.
The studio.
I've got a portable one. I take it with me.
Aren't
now.
You just Becky Thatcher?
Oh, God, I am. There's no denying it. You guys, pontoons are the best. There's the stupidest device you've ever seen. Like, in terms of transportation, because it's just, it's like you take a patio and motorize it and put it on water. Like, it's okay. So good.
And lastly, we've got comedian and director Luce Tomlin Brenner. Luce, what is good?
So many things are good. Thank you for asking. I'm happy to be here. And I just got back from a very sweet little horror festival in Oregon called Oregon Scream Week.
Nice.
It's just 3 little years old. It's a little toddler. But I saw some incredible short films. There was one that had a spider in it, and I actually shouted, oh, no, which got too much attention, and I didn't mean to be that person, but I was very scared. And I saw an incredible short film from a bunch of Portland State University students called Fanatico, and it was like this amazing, like, giallo film about teen sex workers getting killed by a nun and them, like, fighting back against her, and it was just perfect. It was so spot on. And I had a great time. I love seeing what people are doing outside of Los Angeles, being creative and talented other places. It's
I think yelling oh no at a horror festival is the equivalent of a standing ovation.
It really is.
That's true.
Yeah, I will say, first, we're going to get into this because today we're talking about scary stories to tell in the dark. I'm very mad. It was so. Because people were like, oh, it's like a kid's
thing.
Wait,
you don't want to tell us what's good with you before we get into that?
No, he's yes-anding Luce.
I just wanted to make sure he got his moment.
But the one thing I will say is that I was in a pretty, like, excitable theater. And see, I'm normally not a theater talker, but once you unlock the box, you know.
You can't stop.
Yeah, I'm going to eat it up like lox.
The toothpaste does not go back in the tube.
I saw the rhyme and I went for it.
Yeah, it's like we're party now.
Yeah, that could be a T-shirt.
Iffy, what's good?
What's good with me? I think I talked about looking for a place on the last pod after the last. Mm-hmm. Found a place.
Yeah,
very good. You know, first thing, got my gaming system rig set up. I was living in the dark ages for.
Then you
a day.
Set up your daughter's room.
Yeah. No
oh no,
food,
the,
no
my
bed.
Daughter's room is. I'm still in the process of building her bed. She's gonna have like a little frozen bed.
And, oh my god! Cute.
Yeah, it got to a point where I started, and then I was like, oh. I need a screwdriver, and I didn't get a screwdriver yet, so it's waiting for her. She's coming over on Sunday, so I have time.
You know, there's two different kinds
of screwdrivers.
Flathead and
Phillips head, flathead. Okay. You know, the two flat pointy.
I know, because I'm
such a carpenter over here, but yeah. I just wanted to be sure.
Yeah, I got
you
it worked
out.
You
know, there's two kinds.
I had a power drill, but I thought it was overkill for like a baby thing.
Yeah, it's gonna like go right through the bed. And you're like, well, back on the floor again.
So Olaf has a third eye now.
Yeah. And you'll like it. On today's show, we'll be talking about scary stories to tell in the dark, like I said before, and I'm going to rant about Hobbs and Shaw. We'll answer a call from the Who Shot line, and as always, we got staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment called Itadick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, is this important? Do I care? And first up and foremost is Disney being concerned.
So concerned.
Alonzo and friends spoke last week about some of Disney's plans to reboot a bunch of newly inherited tentpole franchises from their acquisition of 20th Century Fox. But what about them spicy titles? According to Variety, Disney is concerned about quite a few of the Fox properties it now has under its control. Number one, they're concerned with Taika Waititi's World War II satire Jojo Rabbit, which is Waititi portraying a fun, imaginary version of Adolf Hitler. One executive said that it could alienate the core Disney audience. And number two concern is the Deadpool franchise. Disney is reportedly concerned again about how that potty-mouthed R-rated superhero could fit into one of their own PG-13 Marvel universes. There has been no announcement about a future Deadpool film, so I don't know what they're getting on about. And number three is the X-Men movie, The New Mutants. The film has already been shot and has been in production hell for over 2 years with a huge failure of Dark Phoenix. Disney is apparently not sure what to do with Fox's last entry into the X-Men franchise. Is this important? Do you care?
I love the idea that this corporate behemoth would be like, we're going to buy this thing and then be surprised by titles within it. Like,
yeah, it's not a mystery box that they have at a dollar store.
Oh, a pig and a poke.
How exciting. It's like Chopped. Like, make this out of this rare bit and this lettuce. But Jojo Rabbit, A, looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a Fox Searchlight, which is... We talked about that when Disney did acquire Fox, that Searchlight was going to be the one where all these quirkier, interesting titles are, and what would that mean for them? I wonder if, are they putting forth this concern as kind of due diligence of, didn't you hear us say we were concerned with it?
Can you see us gripping the pearl?
I
mean, it's a little baffling because, you know, Disney used to release R-rated movies, not just by being the owner of Miramax, but also like, you know, Touchstone and Hollywood Films and those divisions did, you know, they put out like Wes Anderson movies and stuff like that. And so why now suddenly it's this notion of like, well, we want to turn Home Alone into a Disney Plus series, but we really don't know what to do with Deadpool.
Yeah.
I find it a little bizarre. And I was having a conversation on Twitter because go figure, this topic comes up a lot on Twitter. Somebody was saying, well, you know, I can't see how you would put Deadpool in the MCU because you would have these movies that a certain chunk of their audience can't see. And the whole thing about the MCU is the movies all tie together, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know what? Once Upon a Deadpool came out last year, and it was the PG-13 edit of Deadpool 2, and they managed to squeeze a little more money out of it. So it's like, do your R-rated Deadpool 3, then do your sanitized Deadpool 3, and like, you know, it's extra bucks for you, and it keeps your whole MCU intactness going. But yeah, it's a little concerning that...
Are you also concerned?
Well, I'm concerned about their concern, you know, because like Searchlight, you know... like it or not, or care about this as a meter or not, like they had, what, three Best Picture winners in six years? You know, like they know what they're doing and they have a formula that works, and not all their movies are great, but, you know, they do cool stuff, and there's a way for them to exist under the gigantic corporate Disney umbrella, which should be able to, like, send its tentacles out into, you know, infinite number of directions. I don't know why suddenly there's this thought of like, oh, this is a Disney movie and this isn't a Disney movie. And it's like, it could all be, and why not?
Right. Well, people aren't going for Disney, yes, when they go to a Fox Searchlight movie or even to see Deadpool. I don't know why all of a sudden Disney thinks that it's like, but will anyone care about Deadpool now that Disney owns it? Like, no one's going for Disney.
Right. And Disney fans are not like, oh, automatically sign me up. You own it now? I'm in.
Or they're not automatically idiots either. Or like, some people are children who watch Disney, but like not every single person who likes Disney.
Oh, man. Well, that's what's wild is, just to go back to what you said about Miramax and Touchstone. It's like, you've done this before. And I do think like this is like a, could possibly be an offhanded comment that was sensationalized, where, or like just one dumb executive. Like, you know, if you've been in a room, let me not get myself.
I mean, it's crazy after they put penises on the cover of The Little Mermaid, but now they care.
Now they care.
Come on.
But it's like, I think it is closer to like, you know, execs doing their due diligence of like, yeah, I guess we're concerned, but they're still going to do it anyway.
I think it would be easier. Like, you're right. If you read the story, it is sort of like one guy in one screening said one thing. But it would be easier to slough that off if Disney weren't doing things like shuttering Fox 2000 and like laying off so many people and like applying their rules about repertory films to the Fox library. Like, they're doing a lot of shitty and stupid things. So this just sounds like of a piece with the shitty and stupid things they've been doing.
It's a corporate shitty decision.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, so I guess it is important, and it seems like we all care.
Speaking of shitty corporate decisions, after the recent tragedies in El Paso and Dayton, Ohio, Universal has decided to cancel the release of their new film, The Hunt. The movie is about, quote, a group of heavily armed rich people hunting down rural locals as an organized game, unquote. Many have attributed the cancellation to negative comments from Donald Trump and Fox News' framing of The Hunt as a movie that encourages rich left-wingers to hunt down conservatives. But Universal's decision to cancel the film came before these remarks, allegedly. Is this important? Do you care?
I do care about this for many reasons, because we deal with that a lot. I know that their premise of them having decided to pull it beforehand has actually been validated by the fact that they pulled physical signage in LA, especially before any of the tweets went out. It is tricky because it's the kind of thing that as studio execs, it's like, well, you kind of knew the film that you got behind when you greenlit it.
Like, there are already a ton of mass shootings.
Right? And yes, like,
it's never not a time when one just happened.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Right. Also, we're never going to have that in the foreseeable future.
Right.
Like, oh, that sweet oasis of time where a shooting is an impossibility. I know that one of the exact decisions at this point, and why I'm interested to see if they do ultimately just release it digitally instead of doing it theatrical, is the idea of compounding a film like this. If a film like this had a shooting at the theater, I mean, like, freaking Trainwreck had shooting. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, I've seen people that have sort of said like Universal's actually doing it because Donald Trump has this shadow army of gun nuts out there, and if he's now bad-mouthing this movie, we're all in danger if we go see
it. Well, and that's the thing, is because I'm the same kind of like conflicted in the sense of like, it does feel like it's squelching something, but yeah, we are in this time where, like, you know, the release weekend, Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson, or any one of those, you know, shitty people can like be like, this is the movie that's going to start the race war. And what's so funny to me on an artistic level is that just based on the kind of premise of this, it's going to be a like satire on progressives. Like, it's going to be making fun of the left.
The National Review is like, you should be able to see this movie because the good guys are the working class red state folks, and it's the elite a-holes who are hunting them down.
Yeah, and as tired as I am of this like kind of like assumption and stereotype that, you know, the right wingers are dumb and all this, it really feels like, for you to read this synopsis and think they were going to make a movie about it, it's like, oh, you don't understand. They literally keep saying satire, so you can only assume that that the same. I feel like it's the same, like the like super progressive people who like miss the point of Get Out, where it's like this is another like movie that's kind of shining light on how the left can kind of get out of hand.
Well, and this is also this is a Universal Blumhouse title. So yeah, 2 years ago they put out Get Out, which is a movie about like awful rich white people scooping the brains out of black people's heads so they can live forever. And it's like no one took that
in the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the Purge is just killing people.
Yeah.
Well, how many? I mean, like, this is based on, what is it, The Most Dangerous Game?
Essentially,
the
yeah.
idea, I've seen iterations like of this in TV and film for so long. We had the whole Hunger Games franchise, which was about children in a reality, like, having to kill each other for a partial amusement.
One of my favorite social media reads has been some online critic was saying, like, there just shouldn't be movies about hunting, period. And
oh,
then somebody
God,
pulled out, like, 20 past tweets raving about Hunger Games.
Yes.
Like, maybe that's not your hill to die.
Yeah.
See, it just, what bothers me about it is it's just such a weird precedent. Like, you can pick anything out of the news and connect it loosely to a movie that doesn't have anything about it, and then you can just start pulling titles. I mean, it's like Disney saying, well, we're going to change this, the way this looks, the way this looks. Like, we can't just start changing art. Not that I think The Hunt is high art. But
yeah, but no, it is a chilling thing. And you know, they do always, they go after, what is the Milos Forman said, they go after the pornographers first. You know, they always go after the art. You know, Tipper Gore starts out with the heavy metal bands that nobody likes and wants to defend, and then that becomes
Some
the insidious.
Like those bands.
It becomes the insidious, well, you know what I'm saying. But the insidious creep of this sort of censorship. So that's what bugs me.
It was just important for me that people know, Mike, deep commitment.
Dre liked Wasp. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, Wasp. Let's leave it there. Wasp.
Yes.
Good.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
You wept as we crafted the tragic tale of Jar Jar, a Star Wars story.
Yeah. Dude, like, he forgives Darth Vader. Lisa still love you, Annie.
You gasped out loud at the shocking twists of Face Off 2, Faces Wild.
He takes his kid's face.
What?
Now we're writing an entire screenplay week by week on Storybrick Season 2, Heaven Heist.
Hey folks, Freddie Wong here with some exciting news about Story Break, the Writer's Room podcast where three Hollywood professionals have 1 hour to spin cinematic gold. We're shaking up our format by turning Heaven Heist, one of our favorite ideas we've ever come up with on the show, into a full screenplay.
Heaven Heist is an action comedy about a crew of misfit gangsters robbing the celestial Bank of Heaven. Think of Coco meets Point Break.
Join us as we write this crazy movie scene by scene and get an inside look at the screenwriting process on our podcast Story Break every Thursday on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Luce Tomlin Brenner.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Here's the spooky storyline from IMDb.
It's 1968 in America. Change is blowing in the wind, but seemingly far removed from the unrest in the cities is the small town of Mill Valley, where for generations the shadow of the Bellows family has loomed large. It is in their mansion on the edge of town that Sarah, a young girl with horrible secrets, turned her tortured life into a series of scary stories, written in a book that has just transcended time, stories that have a way of becoming all too real for a group of teenagers who discover Sarah's terrifying tone.
I feel so privileged we got to be part of that audition.
Do you need a lozenge?
Chill running down my spine.
Off rip. I only saw a bit of the trailers, and I thought they were going to go for the anthology type just because of the stuff.
Me too.
Book. So that was interesting. And then they kind of did the Goosebumps thing. And I was like, okay. And at first I was like, kind of like, all right. But then like I liked this story, but then there were just parts of it that
clunky.
Felt a little clunky.
I wanted more of the story.
I wanted
three
to know
books.
What Can the fuck I, happened yeah. to her mom. Where's her mom?
She what? Left. She
just
does not
left.
Love
Sometimes
her anymore.
People leave.
Yeah, they, like I was expecting. I was like, oh, her mom is Sarah Bellows.
Yeah,
or she is Sarah Bellows.
Right. Sometimes moms leave.
But that's what was so funny is like I was hoping some kind of resolution of just like or like. someone had an answer other than she just left. She went out for milk and did not come
they
back.
They did lean on that point a lot. I think it was maybe just to draw another sort of isolated parallel between Stella and then Sarah, the ghost figure.
Yeah.
I have a question. So these came out at a time that it seems like it would have been perfect for me to read all of them. I never read any of these. Yeah, no, were you guys familiar with these?
I'm ruled, too old for this.
These ruled my world.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
I think these are directly the reason why I'm interested in horror.
Okay.
Because I used to get them out of my school library in elementary school, and I wouldn't actually get them out. I'd take them and I'd read them in the corner until I got too upset, and then I'd put them back. And then I'd be like, never again. And then the next day I'm like, I gotta see what's next. And then it would just like re-traumatizing each time. And I have them. Have them all with me.
Now, when you were a kid, did you get the ones, the original drawings that were apparently scared the shit out of everybody?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. No, okay. I don't truck with those other drawings. They don't exist to me. They're not canon.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one thing I know about this series is that original drawings, too scary, they redid them.
They redid them like 10 years ago.
It was like 2011 they redid them.
Yeah, it was recent.
I'm definitely interested in reading these, which is probably a good sign. It's funny because I hadn't seen the trailer. I went into this as blind as a gal with sight can be. And... Wow. I hadn't read the books. I didn't see the trailer. I got a list from you guys that I was supposed to see this for today. So I did. But because of it, what I got a sense of was I promise I'll tie these together. I was a huge Flight of the Conchords fan when they were just doing music. And when they did the show and then like songs would be part of their episode. And I was like, oh, I know that song.
Yeah.
Oh, you made it kind of the part of the narrative in this way that's a little weird to me because I knew the song already.
Mm-hmm. Spot on.
And so it sort of, and so this had, I wasn't familiar with the stories, but it had that kind of wedged in. I thought it was a smart framing device for taking these like standoff stories and putting them and like literally giving us the most archetypal characters. Like it's the kids from It. It's the kids from Goonies.
Yeah.
Like when the first three showed up, I was like, oh, where's the handsome boy? And then Ramon showed up and I was like, oh, thank you, handsome boy. I knew you were coming. So I get that as a smart framing device, but there was like a bit of that. Ooh, we're wedging this in.
Oh, it totally was wedged in. And also, none of the stories in the movie are actually the stories in the book. They're pretty different.
They're all a little different.
Like the jangly man is like two different stories crammed together. The like big dream woman. They basically took all of Stephen Gemmell's art from the original books and then a little bit of the story and then wove it in. Like the woman who comes to get her toe, that's two different stories. Like that's not the woman.
Yeah, I had zero familiarity with the books and I kind of went in not really knowing what to expect. And, you know, look, I except maybe for Iffy, I'm like the biggest scaredy cat in the world when it comes to horror films, you know. So it's very easy to make you go, you know, so like PG-13 is more my jam because like it's only so far they're going to take
it. That Hallmark vibe.
Exactly. We'll get to that. But but no, what I thought was interesting though was that like they did work in this sort of larger narrative structure where it was about like, what does fear make people do? How does fear manifest? How do powerful people use fear to manipulate other people? That kind of thing. I thought that sort of wove its way through both the present day story with like the bully and whatnot, and then the sort of historical tragedy of it, which you're right, it does feel a lot like It, where, you know, these kids are fighting against their town's old sins, basically. But, you know, I'm a firm believer in like quality slumber party horror, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think there should be movies like, you know, Paranorman and, you know, like just like movies that are aimed square, like the second Ouija movie, like aim at a, like at a 12-year-old audience that is ready to get the crap scared out of them in their living room.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. You need a gateway horror movie. I used to nanny girls when It came out and they wanted to see it, but they were like 9. And I was like, you absolutely just cannot see it. They're like, well, can we see the trailer? And they, all day long, can we see the trailer? And I finally was like, you know what? Fine. I'm not getting paid enough to say no. So I had them watch it and they freaked the fuck out, of course.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because
so
it's
much
so
worse.
Upsetting.
Well, and then now they're just imagining every terrible thing they could
that
even
begin
to.
That was in between everything. Yeah. So when I was watching this, I was like, oh, those girls would love this movie because it's scary, but it's not, there's nothing like the deaths aren't gory. Like,
I mean, these deaths were
intense.
Those deaths were so intense. One thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, and it sounds like it's taken directly from Stephen Gemmell. Did you say the illustrator?
Gemmell.
The creatures are incredible. Mm. Like, I was not happy. There's a scarecrow moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's this blobby, pale-faced woman whose face is so unnerving and smiling. Mm. And then the jangly, the man in bits. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm not having this.
Yeah, that was.
I have been happier.
It was all bad.
So crunchy.
Yeah, definitely. 90% of the movie for me was watched with my eyes very squinted.
Technique.
It was too much. Because first off and foremost, people were like, oh, it's like a kid's thing and all this. There are too many jump scares. A man's neck just gets straight up snapped.
Oh yeah,
kid gets stabbed in the belly with a hoe,
pitchfork.
You know, I'm bad with my farm tools. Because you can't stab someone with a hoe. Yeah.
Never say never.
Well, you could come down like Michael Myers could do it. It was a lot for me. I was next to a couple and you know, they were there chit chatting, so I was like, okay, if you chit chatting in the movie, then that unlocks. Also, there was a man who came in late and had his iPhone flashlight on to find his seat, which I'm like, the numbers are illuminated, guy. Like, that's why.
My fear. Yeah. Is people coming to the movies with their flashlights.
I really liked that there weren't a lot of adults around. I think that's hallmark to kids. I love the Goosebumps and Fear Street growing up, but that was like. When I graduated from Scary Stories, it was to Goosebumps and Fear Street. And then not having adults around that care about you terrified me as a kid. Like, just the idea, obviously that's a kind of a privileged perspective, but the idea that I could tell my mom that there was a ghost and she wouldn't believe me and the ghost would torture me until I died.
Well, yeah, the idea that no one will believe us, we have to fix this ourselves.
And I think that's like a real thing that kids can apply to actual life.
Yeah,
and
kids
are constantly dismissed and saying that however they feel is too dramatic or not important enough. And
there's nothing under your bed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not speaking from experience.
Yeah.
No.
But I think it's just like a really great way to empower kids. Of course, two of them never come back. But the main girl.
They might. They leave it at the ending with a.
There's two more Scary Story books, so they easily have the names built in already.
You mentioned Hallmark movies earlier, and I was reminded in the opening of this film, they lean so hard into like the foliage of autumn, and the Halloween stuff. And it's like, I kind of, they actually. You know, Matt Pivovarczyk, who's been a guest on this show before, refers to it as season porn. You know,
because
they'll do like a whole month of fall movies, and it's all like hayrides and cider and pumpkins and harvest festivals.
Spray it in my face, I love it.
But like this movie is so much a movie about Halloween, and I feel like when Halloween rolls around. Any horror movie just becomes, it's Halloween, let's watch this.
Yeah.
But I think there is this sort of growing genre of specifically Halloween movies. I mean, obviously Halloween, but also like Trick or Treat and like other films that are built on the premise of Hocus Pocus. Like, this is the holiday, this is the night that shit is going down. And so I like, as somebody who likes a holiday movie, like, if this is your holiday, this is your movie. Movies that scared you as children, whether they were horror films or not.
Watership Down.
Ooh.
Not purposeful horror movie, but like shadow bunnies coming back to take you to the netherworlds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Wicked Witch in Wizard of Oz.
Totally.
4 years, terrified. Couldn't watch the whole movie.
The claymation scene in Moonwalker.
I hate what you're doing.
Michael Jackson!
And their face warps into a monstrosity.
That was amazing.
I wish everyone could see Iffy's face. Because
I watched it so much. My mom said I would watch it. At first it scared me, and then I fell in love with it. But I would just watch it, that scene, and then cry and run away. But I would keep watching it every day. And I think that was the last known time I was a fan of horror.
The whale in Pinocchio.
Ooh. Oh, that scared me too.
Yeah. Monstro. Right? Yeah. And honorable mention, the tunnel in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate
Factory.
For sure. Terrified
for
me.
Sure.
Where you see the worm on the face and the chicken gets beheaded in a G-rated movie.
Yeah, and he's clearly losing his mind during
it. Yeah,
I was
just
like, oh no, we can't trust him.
Yeah.
The Witches, too. Did you guys watch The Witches?
That. Oh, yeah. With the Angelica Houston.
Yeah, her taking her face off. I had never seen anything like that as a kid, and I was just baffled by how upsetting it was.
Truthfully, the claymation Frosty the Snowman.
Really?
Horrifying start to finish. Won't watch it. Still.
Claymation is
uncanny. Wait.
Am I thinking of the right one?
Do you mean the snowman narrator of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
No, so that. Korolev's
named names to Huac, so you should be afraid of him.
All right, so let's go ahead and give our final review of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Would you screen it, stream it, or skip it?
I would screen it. It's about to be Halloween. Get in the mood.
It is about to be. Bless you. Bless your commitment.
Thank you. I'm very on trend. No, I think this is a great thing to get you going for Halloween. Take the kids in your life and scar them. You know, you can be that person in their life that they're talking about 20, 30 years later.
To their therapist. I say screen it. I had a blast. And it is this is my level of like horror where I'm still squirming, but I'm having a good time and not just like completely wanting to run out of the theater.
Yeah, I would also screen it. This is one that there were pauses of jankiness throughout, like a little clunky at bits, but I enjoyed watching it, and the takeaway of it's wonderful, and the specificity of those creatures is something you should carry with
you. Yeah, I mean, GDT always gonna, you know, kill it when it comes to monster design. Yeah, I got nicknames for everyone. Leo Dio, GDT. But I truly enjoyed it. I'd say if you're not me, definitely screen it. This is definitely would be a stream it for me. On its, I like watching scary movies on a smaller screen. That's how I watch Hereditary. Very far away from it. You know, if I can, or like I said, my new strat that I figured out, go to the Los Feliz 3, that one theater with that tiny ass screen. Like, that's probably the way to go.
Just watch on your phone with a selfie stick.
Yeah. That's what I do. That's good. Terrifying. Too many jump scares. Don't let anybody lie to you. There's tons of jump scares. But it was a fun romp. We'll be right back after we hear from another show on Max Fun.
Romp.
Hi there, I'm Winston Knoll, and I play a bunch of characters on Mission to Zix, an improvised science fiction podcast. And this is our incredible sound designer, Shane.
Hello.
Shane makes it possible for me to fill our galaxy with ridiculous characters.
Such as the Grand Coulomb of the planet Fleur.
And the sentient starship, the Dezelmash, man.
And Bino. Bino loves character actors with versatility.
And Predator J. Ryan, Lone Shark.
And, of course, AJ-2A-4, the defected clone trooper. Someone say clone? You call it clone? Well, I'm sure technically we're all clones.
Shut up with that clone stuff. Shut up.
There are 5 other cast members, too, but I sort of feel like I'm the alpha.
No, that's not the case.
Okay, that's fine. The season finale of Mission to Zix is coming up next week, so this is the perfect time to dive in and catch up with our intrepid crew as they explore the Zix Quadrant. Give Mission to Zix a listen on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ivy Whiteyway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Luce Tomlin Brenner,
Drea Clark.
Now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, play that call.
Hi, guys. My mom and I are huge horror fans and always look forward to watching them together when I come visit. This week, we were talking about our favorite horror movies from each decade. So the question from both me and her is two-part. What's your favorite decade for horror movies? And what's the best horror movie from the 21st century? My mom, grandpa, and I all have the same favorite decade, but very different answers for our favorite movie from this century. Thank you, guys. Bye.
So she's not going to give us the answer.
She's
not going to tell us.
She's not even giving us her name.
I know.
So, you know, it's all very secretive.
Oh, man.
But thank you. That's a good question.
I like the mystery.
It's such a good question because the more you think about it, the very specific flavors of each decade comes across because it's also then illuminating of like what it is you love about horror or what is the stuff. So when I was looking at it, for me, I looked at, oh, what are the films that I would rewatch the most and that I find thought provoking as well as well done. And I landed in the 1960s, you guys.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was, because I was, honestly, my first thought was the 30s because the sort of monsterness of it and monster creation.
And but, Val Lewton. And,
yes. Know. And then, but the 60s, I was like, oh my God, like you have Psycho and the Birds, like, and the amount of filmmakers who've been influenced by Hitchcock over the years. I'm not as crazy about this director, but Rosemary's Baby and Repulsion both came out in the 60s. Yeah. Night of the Living Dead.
Of course.
The Haunting, which was, I think, the first Hill House sort of iteration that we had.
Still scary.
One of my very favorites. It's actually a French film. Eyes Without a Face,
which
like the skin I live in would not exist if it weren't for that film. And Eyes Without a Face is one when I've gone to recommend a horror film to like a film fan who doesn't. That's my film. That's my go-to. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
Yeah.
Village of the Damned, Black Sunday. Carnival of Souls. There are so many movies, you guys.
Carnival
the
of 60s, Souls.
But like, so all of those like give me a very specific flavor too. Of like, there's fear. There's some of that metaphor that started to come through even more in the 70s. There's you know, as April Wolf loves to say, she loves to talk about elevated horror, and like these have a real elevated sensibility. Please make sure she knows I said that.
The Innocents was the 60s too, right?
Yeah, I mean, what a decade. No, what did you guys, did anyone else?
I considered the 60s deeply, but I was afraid someone else would pick it. I went with the 80s with the bookend of the early 90s and the late 70s because
I won't be constrained to one studio.
Because there's like this blur from the end of the 70s and then it fades into the beginning of the 90s. And I grew up, I was like a very little child in the 80s and then more of a regular child in the 90s. And I came from a film buff family. We went to the video store every weekend and I was so obsessed with the VHS box art those movies. And they were also like colorful and gory. And some of them were even like trying to break through the wall of the box. And it horrified me a lot. Along with Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, those types of illustrations just captured my imagination and I created like worse stories in my head. And then I couldn't wait until I was old enough to watch them because my parents were also very strict about what I watched. So I wasn't allowed to watch horror movies until I was a teenager. Exactly, I did. And I'm trying to pass it on. And so then I grew up to like immediately get into like those slashers. And Halloween is my favorite franchise. And I really also love Nightmare on Elm Street. And when I see those movies now, they comfort me weirdly because it reminds me of trick-or-treating and coming back home and seeing those on like network TV being heavily slashed and how scared I was as a kid. And it's just very exciting and warm and fuzzy for me. And I think because, you know, VCRs and VHS were so big at that time, so many more horror movies came out direct to video. So it was like a really interesting time for schlocky, fun, silly horror.
I went with 80s too, and I think, but for me, it had just more to do with the fact that I was sort of coming of age and getting to see R-rated movies and being less of a coward. Like, I literally didn't see Jaws until I was in college.
Wow.
Like, you know, and it came out when I was like a child, but I just was too afraid, you know. But yeah, so like, but for me, it's, you know, yeah, I like some of the slasher franchises. Obviously, Halloween, you know, kind of came and went. They're up and down as far as the sequels and stuff. But I think about movies like Near Dark The Hitcher and The Stepfather, really like creepy, but also like we're saying stuff, you know, The Shining, obviously. I also really enjoyed, and it just flew right out of my head what I was going to talk about. But, you know.
That's a witch's curse.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why.
But yeah, no, there were a lot of those 80s movies that, you know, it was really just about the time that I saw them and my willingness to like go. Oh, and then Stuart Gordon doing stuff like Reanimator and From Beyond.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so there were interesting directors doing interesting things, and just me personally being at the right age to finally start appreciating them and seeing them in the first run and that kind of thing.
I really want to reiterate, it's important for me that people know I was not alive in the 1960s. I am very
young.
That's not
implying that.
Yeah.
With me, it's more of a almost philosophical choice than a like just straight up based on this. And it's I think that every current decade will be the best for horror, because I think one of the greatest things about horror is when you bend what's in the zeitgeist and take everyone's current fears and it'll hit differently. There's a reason like The Exorcist hit differently back then than if we do a remake now, and it's because you're right in the middle of the like Christian panic. And like I remember, like, my mom, I asked her if she saw The Exorcist, and she said, no, that's how you catch demons. Like, there's the thing of being scared based on what's on screen, and then there's another thing of being scared because it follows you home. And, like, you know, Chucky hit me at
an age. It follows?
Yeah.
Da-da-da!
Get Out. That's another scary movie.
How could you do
movie.
That to us?
We have fun.
Oh, yeah, we're having too much fun here. But yeah, you know, you have like movies like Get Out and Us just kind of taking, like, there's a difference to being like scared in the theater and like being scared thinking about it at home, being scared to turn on your car in the middle of the night. So for that reason, that's what I pick for the scariest decade.
If he lives in fear, yeah. So just whatever the whatever closest happened, fear whatever. Is. Sure, sure.
So every decade scares me.
I was scared of the pale woman last night. I was in bed and I woke up in the middle of the night and it was the first thing I thought of was that smiley face.
She
it
was
really
scary.
Iffy, what's your favorite horror film of the new millennium?
Mm. Oh, man. You know, as much as I hated every second in my fiber, in my bone, Hereditary, because I just like the way it played with the tempo of a horror movie. I think you go into a horror movie thinking you're going to be scared right out the gate, and then you know when you're going to be scared. And this movie is the slowest of burns, which is why I think a lot of people who went into it was like, oh, it wasn't that scary. It was like, oh, did you leave before the last like minute of the film? Because that's what made it scary, is like, especially for a scaredy cat like me, it tricked me into feeling safe, and you let your guard down, and then you start opening your eyes and watching and getting in this info, and then it just goes 0 to 60 and ruins your whole entire life. So that, you know, I still like sometimes close my eyes and see the lady hanging from the roof and cutting her head off with piano wire. Like that is like an image that is like burned. Why? Because my eyes were open all the way, and they're not supposed to be.
You thought watching it on your phone would save you.
Oh, yeah. No, this one was at TV on the couch, leaned back.
So like, far
I was
back.
Yeah, I was leaned back.
I'm going to go Babadook. A movie that I found really unsettling, but in a very kind of character-driven kind of way. But yeah, it just it was very squirmy, but also I couldn't look away because I cared so much about the people that it was happening to and what was going to happen. So, like, yeah, I'm super fan of that. I really like The Nightingale, too. That's in theaters right now, Jennifer Kent's latest. But, yeah, that's for sure mine.
Mine is sort of, I feel like a cop-out, but I'll stand by, is Get Out. Like, I think Get Out is something that we're going to watch filmmakers be influenced by for years. We're going to hear things referred to as like, oh, it's the Latino Get Out. Yeah. It's the woman, feminist Get Out. Like, but there's also...
Well, Get Out is the Black Stepford Wives, you know.
Yes! they did toy with putting that on the poster, but ultimately... No, but there's... Even when you watch it, it's just an enjoyable view. There's great scares. It's thought-provoking. And then it resonates. Like, it stays with you in this interesting way. And I think it's an important film. So, yeah.
Babadook was mine.
I
had it back up. I always come ready. But that was the movie that scared me more than any other movie I think I've ever seen. So I'm legitimately scared of books coming alive or paintings coming alive. So it was like targeted at my fear specifically.
Halloween and Christmas coming together on this show. It's very exciting.
So true.
But I'm gonna go with Jennifer's Body and give horror comedy a little bit of love because that's my genre that I like to work in. And I saw that in the theater. I was always a big Karen Kusama stan, and I it's scary while it's also outrageously feminist and very funny, and there's a lot of really good kills in it while also dealing with like eating disorders and men taking advantage of and harassing and hurting women and toxic female friendship and being in love with your best friend. It's literally about every single thing that happens to a woman.
Yes.
And it also has demons and sacrificing and really
entitled
cool...
indie rockers.
Oh, it was... They're so good. I love Jennifer's Body. So definitely check it out. Highly recommend.
It's a good one.
Well, thank you to everyone who has called in. We've gotten a ton of great calls in the past couple of weeks, so please keep it up. The number for the Who Shot line is WSY 803-1664. Before we go, since I wasn't here last week, I have some final thoughts on Hobbs versus Shaw.
Do tell.
Everyone keeps telling me 2 minutes.
I'm gonna
just make it super
He's
quick.
Getting comfortable.
You need to go ahead and you need to screen it. Get yourself in the theater. I don't care if you have to drive your 64 Mustang through the front door, jump out, grab yourself a Corona, and plop down in the seat. Tyrese was talking lots of shit. Tyrese was very mad about this. He said you can't break up the Fast family. He actually posted and deleted a after it came out because it only had a 180 million opening, which, you know, is a great opening, but it also did take almost $600 million to make and market, probably because we had so many baller cameos. We had Kevin Hart doing a 10-minute monologue in the middle of the movie for no reason whatsoever.
As a character who should have arrested them.
Yeah, his whole job was to stop them, and he did not. And I was here for it. I was like, yes, The Rock, because they're friends on Instagram. Get your boys money. And Ryan Reynolds, totally underutilized, just doing his Ryan Reynolds thing.
Ryan Reynolds?
Okay. Yeah. Look.
It's from the director of Deadpool 2.
Yeah. Ah, so that's how he snuck in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, from top to bottom, Idris Elba as a sexy robot cyborg. It's what I want to be when I grow up, so I'm very happy to finally see it on screen. I'm just saying.
Representation matters.
Yeah, lots of good Idris Elba content. We have him choking on spicy wings. It's a meme now. I love Idris. I want to be him. Eventually. Now it's time for staff picks. It can be any movie, in theaters, streaming, what have you. Drea, why don't you start?
Why, thank you, Iffy Elba. When I say it, it sounds like a character from Wicked. But
I think Elba Grease would be a good drag name.
Yeah. Oh, it would.
I like that. All right, my staff pick is only a couple years old. It's currently on Netflix. But when I was thinking of the Little Women trailer came out. I've been like this lady state of mind, and it's also hot still, which it will be for a while. I'm like, oh, what's a movie full of women that's The Beguiled. 2017, Sofia Coppola directed. It's a remake from a film of the 70s with the same name. It stars Colin Farrell, who is an injured Civil War soldier, and he wanders into this house of women. The matriarch is Nicole Kidman, Kirsten Dunst, Elle Fanning. And so it's like sweltering and has a lot going on. And it's something that when I first saw it, I liked it. And then I happened to rewatch it and was like, oh no, there's so much going on in this film that I really enjoy in terms of kind of what you're even bringing up with Jennifer's Body of how women interact and toxic female friendships and expectations and sexuality. And there's a lot to it. It's real sweaty. The Beguiled.
Good. I thought you were going to say Steel Magnolias.
Oh, my God.
Also streaming.
The Beguiled is a good mushroom double feature with Phantom
yes,
Thread.
Alonzo, yes. Oh, I love that so much.
Well, you mentioned horror comedies. I'm going to throw out real quick, Ready or Not is a hoot, but more on that later. My pick this week is a movie that's opening in theaters with one of the worst marketing campaigns I've ever seen, and this like perceived negative buzz because it got held back from people to get to see it for so long, but it's a wonderful movie. Do not let all the weirdness surrounding it put you off. I'm talking about Richard Linklater's Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Which stars Kate Blanchett. It's based on a novel that I have not read. And apparently, if you love the book, the movie is not what you want it to be because it's not an exact, you know, the book apparently is made up of like emails and receipts. And, you know, it's not that. Like, this is a more straightforward storytelling. Yeah. But Kate Blanchett plays a woman who is living in Seattle. Her husband is a big wig at Microsoft. You come to find out that she, in her past, was this like super hotshot, like, you know, voice of a generation architect. After some personal and professional setbacks, she's kind of put that aside, and she is now sort of like a mad housewife and a control freak and kind of losing her grip. And when her daughter plans a family trip to Antarctica, it sort of blows everything up. And it is funny and incisive and really well acted, and I had no idea where it was going, and I love this movie. It is one of the great sort of like Linklater character pieces. Loved all the performances. Kristen Wiig is wonderful. Billy Crudup. But yeah, I've heard so many people like, ugh, I hate the trailer, or what's this even about, or why has this been delayed? Why is it coming out in August? All that stuff, put it aside. It's a wonderful movie. You should totally see Where'd You Go, Bernadette?
I'm excited to hear that because that book is super weird and the trailer made me nervous. So I will listen to your staff pick, Alonzo.
Thank you, yes. Drea.
I wanted to see it anyway, so now doubling down.
Yay!
My staff pick is a new movie that came out this year called Braid, and it's directed by Mitzi Perone. It came out in February. It's on Amazon Prime and Google and a few other places. It was like a midnight pick at, I think it was TIFF or maybe Tribeca. I think Tribeca Midnight. Last year, and I saw it at a film festival, Axe Wound Film Festival, which all women in horror, last November, and it blew my mind. It's very psychedelic and trippy, but that's those words are not good enough. Mm-hmm. It's about a trio of girls. Two, you get at them when they're like in their 20s, 30s, and two of them are like dealing drugs, and they're getting into mishaps, and they run out of money, and they need to get money from their rich friend who's like reclusive in a beautiful upstate New York mansion. But to go back to this friend, they have to revisit the story and game that they used to play as kids that was like this really whacked out make-believe. And then they go back to the mansion and they fall into this old kind of game that they used to play. Their time lapses and bends and changes and they all kind of get a little psychotic and you can't tell what's real and what's not real. And there's lots of like really beautiful imagery. A lot of things I've just never seen before. But it's just three women and it's Max Medina from Gilmore Girls is the only boy. Mitzi Perone is so interesting. This is the first movie that was funded with only cryptocurrency. And she like raised all the money herself. And this is like her baby. And she's in her late 20s. She's just like a very fascinating filmmaker. And her whole thing was that this was not about men. Like men are not important in the storyline. This is a storyline about these girls. The man is not there to save them. And he doesn't last because of that. But it's very, I've never seen anything like it. I think everyone who likes horror should see it. But it's not overly gory and it's not overly fucked up. There aren't a lot of jump scares. It's weird.
Okay.
But I think if you like weird shit, you can handle it. But don't like.
Okay.
Don't if you don't like
When will someone think of the men?
Mitzi Perone, who directed that, actually was on Switchblade Sisters with April Wolf, who loves elevated horror.
You don't say.
She talked about Donnie Darko. Real fact. Mm-hmm. Real news.
Yeah.
It was a good episode.
So my pick is going to be from, because like I said, I thought this movie was going to be an anthology. So I was like, what is a horror anthology that I actually like? And it's going to be Tales from the Dark Side, the film. And it's all, and really the one that really I love is Lover's Vow, which was the one with the gargoyle who like, is like, oh
I
yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. That, I think about that till this day. I cannot stop thinking because it's such a interesting concept of like, don't tell nobody. And then like, you've been banging that gargoyle and you have a little baby gargoyle you don't even know. And because you bent over and you you told the secret, you got. It's very good. And then there's like a, you know, overarching story, which is what I thought was going to happen with this. I thought, you know, she was going to open the book and then it'd go into the stories and lead. And then maybe she would push someone into an oven and look at the screen and go, don't you just love a happy ending? anyway, yeah. Also, the writer of Lover's Vow went, before that wrote Beetlejuice. I think he has story credit.
Beetlejuice?
Beetlejuice. Hey, what's up, guys? Beetlejuice just came in the studio. Oh, man. Oh, I got to get out of here. Bye. I'm in a Broadway musical now.
Incredible.
Oh, man. Yeah. That was Beetlejuice, everyone. He left. Now it's time for five-star reviews. If you leave us a five-star review, we'll read it on the air. This one is from Magnus Gunderson.
That is the most Minnesota name we've gotten so far. Hi, Magnus. So nice to have you call in.
Yeah.
Or write.
The cast is always on point, and as someone who doesn't have much time to run to the theater, I appreciate their very intelligent commentary on movies. Also, one of my favorite reoccurring moments is when Iffy mentions video game-related things and the co-hosts are stumped. From Magnus. Thanks, Magnus. They'll be excited to know that the Solos event has just got it started on Apex Legends, and we're about to get Iceborne and Monster Hunter, so we're going to see a little snow.
Huh?
Duh.
All right, my game head, my gamers out there, they know what's up. Again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Ya Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast. Or send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Oh my gosh, thank you so much, Luce, for stopping by, talking this spooky stuff with us. Where can people find you?
I am LTB Comedy. That's my initials, LTB Comedy, on all social media. And my horror comedy short Messed Up is doing the festival rounds right now. You can see it at Genre Blast at the end of the month in Virginia.
Ooh, nice. Fun.
Very cool.
And of course, as always, Trey Alonzo, thank you so much. Anything you want to pitch before we roll out?
No.
Okay. I don't have a short playing at a festival.
Well, our producer our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.